Hello and welcome back to the Millennial Ag Podcast, where agriculture is always on tap and no topic is off limits. Thanks for joining us today, your co-hosts, Valene Cawhorn and Catherine Lotsbeach.
Hey everyone, welcome back to our May Mental Health series. This is the second episode in our series, and this one is a little bit different take than we've done before. Val and I are sharing our personal experiences with how to recognize when we're starting to see challenges or, you know, upsets in our mental health. We know how important it is to recognize when something's off, and sometimes it's small shifts in our day-to-day that quietly point to a bigger internal struggle. So today we wanted to share the signs that we've come to know in ourselves in the hope that it helps you to start spotting your own patterns and recognizing when you might be headed down a path that you really don't want to be headed down. Our aim in this series this year is to bring a more personal light to these stories and not just throw, you know, a bunch of statistics and things like that, but to give you real world stories and examples and lived experiences, both from ourselves and of the next couple guests that we have over the next few weeks as well. So settle into today's show. We hope that you get something useful out of it and enjoy.
Yeah. No, I think it's just reflecting back on all the years we've done the podcasting one and then all the years we've done May Mental Health. I don't know if it was our first year of podcasting we started it or whether it was year two, but it has been one branch or one core topic that Millennial Ag is really proud to bring back. And that's why we dedicate the whole month of May to it and then episodes throughout the year too on mental health. It's very near and dear to Catherine and I's hearts, but we also think it's one of those things that continually needs to be talked about and brought up and showing that we struggle too, but we have tools, and some of the tools we have in our toolbox that we've learned over the years, whether it's from friends and family, whether it's been through therapists, whether it's been through, you know, reading books and podcasts or just experiences. It's not easy, but hopefully you guys can at least reflect on this episode and share it with us too, what works for you and what doesn't, because I know what works for me doesn't always work for Catherine and vice versa.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's been helpful throughout our friendship, Val, to get to know each other first on the basis of we can tell when something's off with the other one, but also like you'll try stuff that I'm like, oh, maybe that would help me, or you'll hear about something that, you know, you'll pass on to me, or again, vice versa, and just supporting each other continually throughout the journey, because mental health protection and promotion and well-being is not a one-time thing. Like you can't do all the things on one day and then you're good forever. It's very much a journey. It's an ongoing thing that needs a lot of maintenance, just like your physical health or your spiritual health or anything like that. And I remember when I was first learning about this stuff and I was first, you know, dealing with a diagnosis of anxiety and depression, it really, really made me mad that this was not something that, like, you know, you could put a cast on it, like a broken leg, and you'd be better in 6 weeks. You know, almost as hard as the diagnosis was understanding that this was something I'd have to deal with every single day and, you know, keep an eye on every single day. That's been a really hard thing to come to terms with. But, you know, nearly 10 years down the road, I've learned a lot about the process, both for myself and, you know, in general terms. And I guess I just think that helping people recognize that it really is a journey. There's not a destination besides hopefully better and better mental well-being along the way is just kind of a reality of it.
Well, and I think too, one thing to note that I've learned over the years is when we talk about the diagnosis of depression and anxiety, it's something's wrong with us. And when I was able to make the mind shift change that it's actually our innate ability to protect ourselves. And so like anxiety is not a bad thing, right? Like it keeps me from walking across the street and getting hit by a car. It keeps your kids safe. But sometimes, you know, getting worked up about my to-do list is something that really gets me anxiety, right? The lack of sleep sometimes, and then waking up and feeling like I didn't accomplish anything yesterday and I'm already behind today, and not seeing an end in sight can sometimes trigger it, and going, thank you for keeping me safe. I understand I have a lot to do today, but just trying to chip away at one thing at a time and recognizing that our thoughts and feelings are there to protect us, but they're not always right either. You can acknowledge them and then remind them that maybe they aren't 100% correct in what they are telling you, you know, because they're just reacting to the way we've trained them or the way they've experienced things in the past. You know?
Yeah, definitely. And one thing I remember from Nora's episode last week, and she said it last year too, and I've heard it from my therapist, we've said it to each other, is don't believe everything you think. That's so true, because like you say, those biological processes are there to keep us safe. But in today's day and age, the way that we live and work has changed so much that, you know, it can come out in ways that can be really, really harmful, which is where, you know, things like depression, anxiety, and other mental health challenges can come in. So, you know, I think that's a good kind of overview of how you and I use it. We were thinking that it would be useful to share some of our own warning signs of when our mental health is declining, and then some of the ways that we can bring ourselves back. So do you want to share a few of the things that for you, once you realize them, are like, oh, hey, I'm not going in the right direction?
I realized this wasn't even one I sent you, but it's one of the biggest ones. My therapist helped me realize, but when I start getting in the should mindset, or it's really hard to even empty the dishwasher or do something at night, and it feels like 10,000 pounds are just on me every step I take, I learned that that's a warning sign for me that I'm running myself a little too thin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a similar one just like that. Yeah, you know, it feels like my brain just can't stay in one place. I'll sit down and open my computer. I'll start an email. Before I know it, I've opened 5 tabs. I've walked away. I've started half a load of laundry. You know, I haven't finished anything. It's frustrating. And then that just snowballs. And, you know, your mental energy is depleted when you get to that point. And, you know, it's easy to think, oh, I'm lazy, or I'm procrastinating, I can't get anything done, and everyone's going to think the worst of me because I'm not a good employee, or I'm not keeping up my house. But it's more than procrastination. It's a signal from your nervous system. And it's just easy to get down on ourselves, like you say, and just yell at ourselves and, you know, say, snap out of it. But it's actually a symptom that needs to be addressed.
At Peacock Technology, we're transforming dairy farming with robotics and AI.
Our pre-brush and post-spray robots work on rotary milking parlors to ensure consistent udder hygiene, alleviating labor shortages, and maintaining high standards year-round.
Our advanced vision system and online platform integrates data from wearables and body condition scores, giving farmers a complete view of each cow's health and performance, saving time and cost while boosting efficiency and profitability.
Peacock Technology, empowering better decisions for your herd's well-being and productivity. Visit peacocktechnology.com to learn more.
Well, and it's easy to find myself, you know, mindlessly scrolling too when I get into that, because it's a quick dopamine. Don't quote me. I'm not a therapist. I'm not I don't have a doctor's degree in hormone release, but you get that immediate satisfaction by scrolling. You know, you're engaging in funny cat videos and horses and cows and other people's life. And my brain doesn't have to do the work, right? It just has to consume. And so for me, it's a quick fix, but it's my way of numbing myself a little bit, or, you know, burying myself. And it's not that social media is bad, right? But it's the amount that you consume. It's just like a bag of potato chips. If you can control yourself and just eat a handful of them, they fill you up and give you the nice, crunchy, salty junk food taste without making you feel like garbage. But when you eat a whole bag of it, you can't hardly move. And so, you know, that's the same thing for social media for me as well sometimes too.
Yeah. And I know for sure, like, it seems like for both of us, we get caught up in it for probably a little too long before we'll mention to each other, I've just been scrolling, like, can you help pull me out, or something like that. And I mean, I think you and I have been down this journey long enough that we recognize the signs quicker, but it's still not, you know, it probably still goes a little further than you would like it to, just because of, you know, it's easy to think, oh, I'm just tired, or, you know, it's just been a lot lately going on in life. And that's often true, especially when, you know, your husband is a farmer and a rancher, or an ag teacher, or you have small people in your life, or you're running a business by yourself in Idaho, that sort of thing. And I guess you and I have worked on being able to recognize it sooner, but it's still like, you know, it'd be cool if it didn't happen at all, but I suppose then it wouldn't be a mental health challenge, huh?
Well, and I think you get through seasons of life too, where there's bigger swings or bigger things you're managing too, and then others, it's not that way. And I've noticed, just to throw one other warning sign for me, is my eating habits. When I'm in a really good mental state, I can be satisfied on a decent sized dinner and just move on and not need snacks, and can sit on the couch and watch TV, and I'm wound up. It's like, ooh, you know, maybe I should get up and eat some chocolate. Maybe I should grab some chips or what have you. Or you wake up in the middle of the night and I'm not really hungry, but I'm munchy. I find myself needing that extra snack, which isn't hunger related a lot of times. It's just me needing to do something that gives me that quick satisfaction rather than working through or training my mind to work on something else in that moment.
Yeah, for sure. One of my warning signs is food related too, but it's cooking for me. I really enjoy cooking. I like making stuff from scratch. It's almost like a zone out time for me, and I can just focus on something that's a little bit mindless, but I'm also like, it's immediate gratification at the end, right? But I know like when I stop wanting to cook and when I do stop cooking, you know, it's a really good warning sign of I'm not doing super great, just because that's something that I do enjoy so much. And then in the same realm as you, like if I, you know, if we don't have leftovers from dinner or whatever, and I'm out and about, you know, I find it easy to just grab something from the gas station or stop at a fast food place, you know, and it's fast and it's easy. But, you know, after you've eaten it, you don't really feel all that good. And that just sort of helps it all snowball too. So yeah, cooking is a big one for me too. And it's actually usually the first one that my husband, Jimmy, will notice, you know, if I'm headed down a wrong direction, and he'll, you know, the way that we've sort of developed together in our mental health journey over the years is that he'll gently ask, hey, noticed you haven't been cooking as much, is everything okay? And, you know, usually it's like, everything's fine. Everything's not fine.
A lot of times the word fine is a good sign that everything's not fine.
Yeah. Well, and I think maybe even like, you know, recognizing a defensive reaction like that, you know, once you get out of your little lizard brain is like, oh, yeah, I said fine. And I snapped back. Things are not fine. But having someone around you, or more than one person around you who knows those warning signs and has the courage to ask you about it is like, you have to have that, you know, you have to have that trust with someone. Because again, also taking care of your mental health is not just you, like it really is a team effort.
Yep. And I think that we've talked about it before. And I think one of the most important tools is having that team in place, but also letting your team develop and evolve. And it can be different layers of your team too, right? Your husband's, our husbands, I should say, are a huge part of it. And then we have our parents, our siblings, and then we have each other, and we have, you know, other friends, and each person gets a different layer of that mental health journey. There's certain people that build trust over time to get into your inner circle and your layer that can say, hey, Catherine, I haven't heard from you in a few days. Are you doing all right? And then there are people that you can just say, hey, let's go for a run, or hey, you want to hit the gym, or hey, let's go grab dinner. And they're on a different level. And that's why it's important to have different levels and outside people too, in addition to, you know, your spouse and your family too, is to not put all that weight on them too, and be able to spread it out and get outside perspectives too, because it's like, it's a lot for one person to carry, whether it's yourself or somebody else. That's why you need people and things in your life that you can cash in on. You know, for me, it's saddling my horse and going for a ride, or going for a run, or getting outside and moving. You know, recognizing, okay, if I can't call anybody right now, which sometimes happens, right? What are things that I can do to just get my body moving and my mind to slow down, right? It's flipping that switch a little bit, because you can sit there and just spin in your brain and then you don't go anywhere.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I love how you talked about like having friends and family around you in layers, and everyone seeing a little bit different perspective and can support you from the perspective that they're seeing. I think that's a really, like, that's the perfect way of putting it. I never thought about it that way. I sort of think, you know, of the people around me as a team. That's sort of how I've always described it to myself. But I like the layered perspective too. And I'm with you totally on, like, I was sort of between therapists at one point when things were really, really hard a few years ago. And I was seeing this one lady who I didn't like very much, but she had a she said exactly what you just said. Like, what's something, if you're sitting there and you're spiraling, what's something you can do that will shift your mind right away? You know, she talked about using your senses. And she said, what's a smell that you really, really like? And I said, I love the smell of oranges. And she said, what if you just carried an orange with you every day? And when your mind starts to do that thing, you just scratch the orange and smell it. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing I have ever. Guess what? It works. It works for me. Or like you said, you know, getting outside, or, you know, even just this morning, I'd had a really hard morning. I've been working from home because the Wi-Fi in my office doesn't work. And, you know, you get stuck at home and you think about all the stuff that you have to do. But anyway, this morning was kind of tough. And finally around noon, I was like, I just have to get out. And so I just went and ran two errands in town. I mean, it wasn't any big deal, but it was just getting out of just kind of the funk that I was in just inside my house, you know. And it seems like, you know, when you're thinking about getting into physical shape, you and I have talked about this before. I've got to go for a 10-mile run every day, and I have to lift weights every single day, and I have to eat salad every single... Slow your roll, right? Like, back it up in what's one incredibly simple, almost seems dumb thing you can do right now just to try and switch out of where your mind is spinning.
I think one thing that sometimes I don't realize I'm doing, but when you sit with yourself too long, you repeat the same thing over and over, and it every time it makes that lap, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until you have this thought that, you know, the imposter syndrome really sits in and you're not good enough and you can't do this and it'll never end and blah, blah, blah. And none of that ends up being true, right? Like, the thing you started with before you spiraled was probably true, but you ended up lapping so many times that your dot ends up this huge circle. And I think recognizing when you've made lap two or three and stopping before you get to 10 is something to keep in mind, but it's definitely easier said than done.
Yeah, that's for sure. And that's true along the whole conversation and aspect and experiences of mental health. It's all easier said than done, which is why we're here talking about it, though, to, you know, to help anyone who's listening realize it's not just you. You're not weird. Or like we said in Nora's episode, you're totally weird because we're all humans and we're all weird. But you're not the only one who deals with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
it's reminding yourself that it's okay. And then to get yourself out of those spirals or pause and replace, like, okay, what would make me feel better? Like, I don't really want to go outside and weed the garden, or I really don't want to go brush my horse to put the saddle on. But I know that once I'm on her back, I will feel so much better, you know? And so it's reminding yourself of, if I sit here for an hour, is that going to make me feel better? Or if I go for a run in the next hour, is it going to make me feel better? And both things can be true, right? Like, sometimes just sitting here is what I really need. And sometimes going for a run is what I really need. So I think if you can pause just for 10 seconds and try to keep your lizard brain from going to the next thing and saying, okay, what's actually going to make me feel better in an hour from now?
Yeah, using like the power of the future, like, how, if I do this, I know I will feel. And like, sometimes it's the same for me. Like, that's just enough of an oomph to get you up out of your chair and say, okay, I don't want to do it. I'm going to go for my stupid walk and drink my stupid water. And I know that I'll feel stupid better after I do those stupid things. So are there any other major red flags or warnings in your life that you want to share, Val, that other people might?
I think we've hit on most of them. I know pulling back and being reserved, because usually when I'm in a very healthy space, I don't mind jumping in conversations and asking questions and being involved. And there's new places are sometimes hard for me too, or when I'm tired and so forth. But when I really pull back or quit, I'm reaching out for help or support or laughter is another warning sign. I don't know if I brought up, but I know you did on your list. And so I think those are my biggest ones. I think once you get down certain rabbit holes, there's other things that come up. My ability to get snappy with people, or I sometimes tend to dump my to-do list on my husband, which is not his problem, it's mine, but in hopes that I can get reassurance that I'm doing a good job and just needing that, you know, verbal affirmation. So I know when I start getting in those snippy negative rounds, that those can kind of be like, ooh, something's not quite right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I'm just thinking about to-do lists and like getting stuff checked off on them. I sent you that meme yesterday that said, I'm getting so much stuff checked off my to-do list today. I'm not getting it done. I just don't want it there anymore. That's how I feel.
And I think giving yourself grace to just pull out the eraser and wipe things off that, okay, if I don't get this done, what's the true implication of it, right? Like, if I postpone laundry for another week, how is that going to affect me? And I have to do the gut check. And usually if I postpone it for too long, it spikes my anxiety. So I'm like, okay, I can't wipe that one off the to-do list, but maybe leaving a glass of water on the counter is not going to be the end of the world, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah. But I have to remind myself, because I know when I get in the, I have to do this and this and this, then I start looking around and thinking of all the other things around the room that I need to do, like pick up that pile of paper over there, or clean the windows or sweep the floor or do all those. And it just keeps adding rather than subtracting things off.
Hi, I'm Tom Heron, founder of Ag Professionals. Agriculture is always innovating and evolving. And at Ag Professionals, we provide the expertise to help you stay ahead. From land use planning and environmental compliance, permitting to real estate, civil and environmental engineering, and land surveying, we offer one-stop solutions you need to grow and succeed. We're proud to support the Millennial Ag Podcast because we believe in the future of agriculture. Let's build that future together. Visit our website, agpros.com, to learn how we can help your operation thrive.
I think you're exactly right. That's just another sign of anxiety, right? And it's just feeding itself. It's a pretty greedy little bugger that way.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add on your things you notice when you...
Yeah, the last one that I would add is same as you, is withdrawing from people. You know, I talk to my mom most days and I talk to my dad usually several times a week. And it's with them, I notice it most, you know, if I'm not talking to them nearly as often. Sometimes it really is just a busy week. But if I start withdrawing and not replying and that sort of thing, it's actually usually one of them saying, hey, haven't heard from you in a bit. You doing all right? And it's like, ah, crap, no. Or, you know, it's like you and I, you know, if we haven't sent each other a voice message in over a day, it's like, hey, you all right? Still alive? You going okay? Yeah. When I start to withdraw and not, you know, not have the usual bubbly conversations or send the outrage of the day to my dad about politics or something, is definitely a warning sign. And so, I don't know, I think just talking through some of the things that we notice in ourselves like that, hopefully the good reminders to ourselves, right? Because sometimes you have to be reminded in sort of a hard fashion that these things really do matter, but just being aware of those kinds of things and when they come up. So we've talked a little bit here and there about, you know, what helps you or like what helps both of us pull out of something in the moment. But what are some of the things you do, you know, on sort of a regular basis to try and keep yourself on the straight and narrow?
I would say exercise is my number one. Exercise and then connection are my top two. So making sure I move my body, my Fitbit on my wrist actually is a huge, huge thing for me. If I can make my 10,000 steps a day, even if I can't get to the gym to work out or run in the mornings, if I can make sure I get my 10,000 steps, I've at least gotten outside for 30 or 45 minutes a day, you know, in addition to just puttering around, and it forces me to make extra steps during my day. So exercise is huge, huge for me. And I try to get, in a perfect world, I'd get 4 to 5 days a week of exercise, but lately it's been 2 to 3 plus. And then I got to add my weekends of chasing cows and horses and cats and dogs and everything else around through. And the other thing too, that I love about springtime, even though it's chaotic, is we have a cat now and I have my horse at the farm. And so I go and feed him morning and night. That's my chore. And John can do it. It'd take him 5 seconds in the midst of all the other things he's pitter farting around doing. But it's just something that gives me an accomplishment. You know, if I started the day making sure Bella and French Fry had their food, then I feel like that little bit of fresh air starts my day off really well, and then ending it the same way. And I sometimes cash in on that John's in his work clothes because he's, you know, he farms and ranches full time. So I'm like, hey, I don't want to get hay on my skirt today. Can you please feed Bella? But for the most part, I try really hard to do that just because it gives me that intentional outside time and a little bit of movement. It's not much, but it's just a little bit. As busy as life has been, it's been hard to sneak in even 30, 45 minutes of running or exercise in. And so that helps me get that portion that's super duper important for me. And I know some of the strongest mental health times have been when I've been, you know, very active and engaged with that. And so I try really hard to make sure that that's a big part of my life on a day-to-day basis. What about for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, outside is a huge thing for me too. The sunshine helps so much. And I, you know, over the years has been figuring out how to manage depression and anxiety for myself. You know, there's definitely like biological factors that can affect it. And one for me is that I am just like chronically low in vitamin D. I just don't produce as much vitamin D as a normal human should. So I take a supplement all year long, not just in the winter, but I take vitamin D every day, but it doesn't do you any good if you don't get out in the sunshine. Like, vitamin D needs sunshine to be activated. So knowing that, and then also just like knowing how sunshine feels and fresh air, you know, sometimes it's raining, like it's clouding up right now. It looks like we're going to get a Colorado April storm, but it just that fresh air blowing like through my hair, going through my lungs, really helps clear out the cobwebs. And for me, you know, it's an interesting thing, you know, growing up on a farm and being actively involved in agriculture, but for some reason, it's really easy to get stuck in my house. I think because there's always work to be done, you know, work, and then all of the domestic stuff that comes with being a wife and mom and just having a house, you know, and just a nudge to get outside. I mean, usually I can get myself to do it, but sometimes, you know, he'll say, hey, just go sit out in the garden for a minute or something. And then also being outside, it sort of correlates water for some reason for me. It's a major switch flipper, if that makes any sense. Like, I love to swim. I love the ocean. I love lakes and rivers. There's not a whole lot of like recreational outdoor swimming around me in Colorado. Keep trying to convince Jimmy that we need a swimming pool. And he keeps saying, I don't want to clean that out every day. So I'm going to have to keep arguing about that one. But, you know, like sometimes just running my hand through the sprinklers that Jimmy's got going in the flower beds, you know, or just putting my hands in the goat water. Like, it's the most ridiculous thing. But finding water, and sometimes if I can't get to water, like if I'm in a hotel and, you know, at a conference or something, I'll turn water sounds on Spotify and just listen to that for a little bit. That's something that I have learned over the last several years. Like, I've always enjoyed water. Like, what kid doesn't like to swim? But, you know, as I've gone through this and learned about myself and what makes me feel better, I've realized that water is very therapeutic for me. So.
No, and I think it's interesting, you know, you brought up going back to the senses, you know, and things that help you feel better. There's something about smelling my horse and horse sweat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of does a similar thing, and animals will do that too. Like, I know that if I just go find Midas or French Fry or Bella and just scratch them for a little while, the cows don't usually let me scratch them.
Right.
Yeah. I can find one of them and just scratch them for a little while. It's just amazing what, yeah, kind of the same, yeah, same deal, but just the fuzzy hair and the dorkiness of something that, like, I wish I was as carefree as my dog.
Right. And you can almost take something from that, right? Like, look at Midas, look at Ace, look at French Fry, you know, any of the goofy goats that I've got running around my place, like, they're there for the pure joy of it. And obviously they're not humans, but why not learn something from them? You know, just, yeah, absolutely. I agree. The smell of animals usually uplifts my spirits. Although I'm thinking for you that you have to hope that Midas didn't meet a skunk that day, because otherwise that'd be pretty offensive.
Well, and he still doesn't think he does anything wrong when that happens. So
that sounds about right. Are there other things for you that, you know, you think about, like, some of the day-to-day stuff, or, you know, I've got, you know, some of the longer term things that I do that, you know, we could talk about too. But
I think the other thing that helps me sometimes is just getting it out of my brain. So if I'm spiraling, like, just writing it down. Mm-hmm. And even if it's mean, rude, whatever, to whoever, getting it written down and then throw it away, and just getting it out of my body and giving myself grace that, again, it's okay to feel that way. It doesn't mean it's right.
Yeah, right. Don't get stuck there.
Yep. But get it out of your body, and then you can process why you were there, what you were doing there, and get past it. And it can, I think we also have to give ourselves some grace too. Something I'm sometimes better than others, depending on the time. But, you know, as females, we go through hormonal shifts in a month, you know? And so, you know, being snippy at people and then crying the next day, being uber, like, we have to give ourselves grace and acknowledge that our bodies are a machine too, right? And we have to give ourselves grace. And I think people need to recognize that about other people too.
I've actually been thinking about that lately. Like, it's an American culture thing, it's a Western culture thing, it's a agriculture culture thing. You know, that we just go, we go, 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 go. We work hard. We base our self-worth on that. And you don't stop for anything. You don't stop for sickness. You don't stop for rest. You just go, because there's always stuff to get done. The animals got to get fed, blah, blah. We all know those things, right? But it's a hard thing to say. It was a hard thing to realize. And it's still a hard thing to even recognize every day in my day-to-day life, just because of the way that I grew up, the way that you grew up, working hard on a farm and a ranch. but we have to take care of ourselves and we have to give ourselves opportunities for rest, because otherwise, you know, it snowballs and you end up in really bad places. And you and I have both been there. There's people all over our communities. I'm sure that every single one of our listeners knows someone who has been there. And we don't really talk about that enough. Or we base our worth on it. And I would say even judge each other on it, you know, whether it's conscious or not, we're doing that. And so, yeah, taking that time to rest, giving yourself permission to be human. We grease our machines, we air up the tires, we blow them out at the end of every day. You know, we put them undercover, we make sure they've got gas. Why wouldn't we do that for ourselves too? Because we're assets, right? We're our most important assets.
Well, and I think too, like in the busy seasons, specifically springtime, and I think that's why May mental health is a good timing too for agriculture, is you're coming out of planting season, calving season, all the things, right? And it's really hard day to day to find, even if it's 20 minutes, mm-hmm. to do something for you, like whether it's sitting down and reading a book before bed or jumping in a hot tub if you have one, or snuggling with the dog, or sitting on the couch, or having that extra cup of coffee in the morning. It's finding those times. Or, you know, said hers was, you know, sitting at a red light, but yeah, like making sure you are intentionally feeling like you are filling your cup up, because being burnt out, I think, is one of the biggest challenges in agriculture, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know that for ourselves, and we know it with all of the friends and family that we work with, because we're all kind of cut from the same cloth.
For sure. So anything else you want to add for this week's episode?
Yeah, I do. There's a couple of things I want to talk about that, you know, are, again, harder in these mental health conversations, but they've really helped me. I know some of it has helped you too, but you and I have referred to therapy quite often in this episode, and we have in previous episodes too. I know when we first started doing this, we were both kind of afraid to admit that we use therapy regularly. And that one, I think, is becoming more and more socially acceptable, if you want to put it that way, which is too bad. There shouldn't be stigma on it, because just having that neutral third party who just listens and helps you unpack stuff, you know, and can help say, you know, is that true? Don't believe everything you say. Pull those threads apart and start making sense of them is really, really useful and worth, you know, what time and money you have to spend on it. It's hard. It's really, really hard. But that's been one of the biggest tools and gifts that I've been able to give myself and that my support system have made sure that I keep up with. The other one is medication. And just a disclaimer, I am not a doctor. I am not telling you to do anything at all, but, you know, from a therapeutic standpoint, but I do just want to put it out there. And this is the harder one to talk about because, again, there's stigma around it. You know, people judge on it and, you know, it can be hard to hear those judgments being passed sometimes, even though people might not know that you're feeling that way. But I take medication every day to manage what I have to deal with. And I've got three doctors who take care of me from different aspects. And for me, it's been a game changer. You know, I wake up every day and I'm usually pretty happy, you know, and it just clears my head and helps my brain run the way that it needs to. Because like I said earlier, some of these things really are biological and you've just got some chemicals that are screwing your brain, and it can take a lot of trial and error to get to the right place that you need for a medication, for a dosage, for the combination, for a doctor that you trust, that you want to work with, all of those sorts of things. But I guess I would just encourage people to not be afraid to explore it if you're thinking that you're needing a little bit of extra support. So
I really appreciate you sharing that and putting that out there, because I think, especially with a lot of the political stigma right now too,
mm-hmm.
and so forth, that medication gets either completely thrown as this is a Band-Aid, or it is over-medicated or under-medicated, and there's all sorts of things. And I think it's an amazing tool. Because you would take ibuprofen for a headache, you take that sort of thing and supplements. And I think it's just making sure you get the right doctor to listen to you, right? Like making your doctor and your team of doctors know what you're going through and how to balance all that chemical stuff that goes on that I, again, not a doctor, don't even know
right
half of what's going on. But I think it's really, really important to have those conversations and have the courage to have those conversations too, because like you said, without the medications, it would be a whole different day for you today than it is when everything's ticking correctly and connecting correctly and that sort of thing. People take blood pressure medication.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's having the courage to ask for help or getting referrals to therapists and shopping too. If your psychiatrist, psychologist, GP, OBGYN, whatever level of doctors you're using, don't be afraid to fire them.
Yep. Don't be afraid to fire them. Absolutely.
Really hard, but you're paying them for a service. So
yeah, I have fired several doctors, therapists, and psychiatrists, and it's been a long road, but the persistence has more than paid off because the quality of my life has improved and stayed dramatically better for where I'm at now. So yeah, just something to consider, you know, for anybody out there who's listening, it can totally be scary. I was scared of it at first, and there can be a lot of trial and error, but don't be afraid to explore it as a tool. You know, it may or may not be right for you, but it's a tool that could help.
And having the courage to tell somebody how you truly feel and what's actually going on can help them actually get the right tools and the right people in place to help you too. If they don't know that a medicine's making you feel more groggy, then they can't help fix it either. So it's an ongoing process. And Catherine, I can't thank you enough for being vulnerable and sharing that with listeners, because I truly believe that it's going to reach somebody that needs it on this week's episode.
That's a really hard one to share about, because like I said, it's very easy to judge someone for it. And just the way that it comes up in common conversation, it's usually belittled and, you know, derided. I know that people wouldn't do that like on purpose or try to hurt you on purpose, but there's still the stigma. And a big part of my mental health journey the last few years, as I felt better and gotten the care that I need, is dealing with that outside stigma in my own mind and realizing that it's okay, and then taking that a step further and being willing to talk about it. So hopefully, if it's even just one person, you know, they can get some help and support that they need. So thanks for that recognition. It's hard, but it's worth it.
Yeah. No, and I think too, one of the biggest changes throughout your mental health journey, at least for me too, is having the courage and then having the confidence then to speak later, right? And being like, screw you, I don't care what you're going to say about it. You know, this is what I need to do. And you can take it or leave it, you know, and having the confidence that you're doing what's right for you and your family is the most important thing out there. And the people that may or may not comment on things like that, you know where they fit in your bubble.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. If someone's got an opinion on it that is less than supportive or useful to you, it's okay to fire them too.
Well, Catherine, I think it's always funny when you and I are like, oh, we're going to just do an episode together. It'll be 20 minutes, blah, blah, blah. We have a good idea and stuff, but I'm looking at our timer and it's hitting 45, which is great. I do really love episodes with you. And I think this one was a really, really important one. And a great way to start, yeah, our second episode in our main mental health series. And I'm really, really excited for the next two episodes to come through. So we want to make sure, listeners, you tune into those and feel free to share all our content. We would love for you to do that, but reach out for help too if you need it. We're going to link the same show notes that were in the ones from Dr. Nora Felposh's episode throughout this entire series, so that if you're needing help, there's at least a few lifelines there. And then also recommend reaching out to your general practitioner and doctor if you need additional guidance and support if you don't have your team in place. So thank you, listeners, and we want you to tune in next week, and thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Millennial Ag Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and like, subscribe, and review to our podcast. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or email us at talktous@millennialag.com. Until next week, we are Millennial Ag.